You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
I also spoke to Caroline Miller, who's an associate professor at the School of People, Environment and Planning at Massey University, about the RMA replacement draft. I began by asking what she believed were the strengths and weaknesses.
I think one of the strengths is that they have actually produced an exposure draft, so that very early in the process we're getting some idea of what the government's ideas are for the reforms. And I think that the reforms are very much focused on te ao Māori and really incorporating Māori concepts, the Māori worldview, and processes that will proactively engage with iwi at an earlier stage and in a more meaningful way. And I really think that is a huge strength, because we're moving beyond making a reference to the principles of the treaty to something making those issues much more central to planning processes and to plans. So I think that's a positive. In terms of the weaknesses, I think what's being proposed is very much revolutionary change. So in other words, it's not really building on the past or taking the best of the RMA, because despite what we might think, there are good parts in it. Instead, they're essentially doing a sort of a zero-based approach. So they're changing everything. And it's very clear from the discussion paper that accompanies the draft bill that this is really part of a much wider suite of changes in terms of local government structures, in housing, in a whole range of areas. So what you're going to do is you're going to have a whole lot of new structures that planning is going to be delivered through, and also you are going to have a whole range of new processes all coming at once. And really, I think we know from the past that that doesn't always produce the best outcomes.
So do you think then that this... Well, Judith Collins has criticised the draft, saying that the rules are too complex and costly and that the bottom lines are difficult to enforce and manage. Do you think that this makes it too complex and limits its efficiency in allowing resource consent and for things to go forward?
Look, I think it's quite difficult to be completely certain about the outcomes, because remember, it's an exposure draft. There's a lot of it which is not there in great detail. However, I think there is some validity in the fact that because there's going to be an attempt to do very comprehensive planning, for instance, housing has been brought into the planning space explicitly, which it hasn't been in the past, that will just by itself make plans more complex potentially. And the environmental limits that are being proposed, we really don't know what they are and how they might work. It'll be a whole quite long transition to put them in place. I think there is a potential for ending up with, yes, only 14 plans, but 14 very large, very complex plans. And with complexity usually comes cost.
How then would you simplify a resource consent model?
Well, I think that to some extent we maybe need to go back to basics and look at the whole consent process and see what is it trying to achieve, and at what stages and in what ways do we have to become involved in the process of people doing development. And I think look, there are plans in New Zealand that really do make a sound attempt to put in place as simple a process as possible. In other words, they only require consents or things where that is really necessary. And I think perhaps we've become overcautious and over-worried. So I think that we could go back and look at perhaps how can we make more things permitted activities such that they don't actually need a resource consent, and where do you need the specific depth and examination that comes with consent process. So I think that really, if I was involved in it, I would want to go back to the basics and see where do we need to become involved, because I was actually a planning practitioner for 16 years before I became an academic. So I've actually done consent work, and I've written plans and done all of those things. And I really do feel quite strongly that we've become perhaps overly cautious about the outcomes or the adverse effects that might emerge.
If you are to make it more simple and allow people to, not have to go through as many steps to get resource consent, how does this allow environmental concerns to be addressed, especially with damage to waterways and kind of third party issues?
I think what you need to do is to look more closely at the types of development, because yes, large developments, developments in environmentally sensitive areas, the consequences can be significant, right? And that's where you will need to be involved and to set appropriate limits, etc. But equally, the outcomes of the RME in terms of, say, water quality have not been good, despite the fact that there are a lot of controls in place. So we need to find out, why hasn't that worked? And one of the reasons it's probably not worked as well as it should have is because we do not do sufficient monitoring and enforcement, because that's how when you pick up when things are going wrong at an early stage and you can move in and put things in place to correct it. So, yeah, one thing is that you've got to get controls that are appropriate to what people want to do and where they want to do it. And that is possible to do.
Where do you think the priorities should lie then? Should it be environmentally focused, or should it be development focused? And is there a risk of confusing people if there's kind of different focuses in the draft?
Yeah, I think that both of them are important, right? And to some extent, planning has always been a bit of a balancing act between the two. And there are certain environmental effects that, if they emerge, they are completely irreversible. Do you see what I mean? Once something's gone, it's gone. It can't come back. And they're the things that you really need to be very, very aware of. I don't think it's a case of saying, should the Act be environmentally focused or should it be development focused? What you've got to try and do is find the balance, because at its heart, that's what planning is trying to do, is find the balance that allows for development, because that is just how the society we live in uses resources, and it has to create economic development and growth and to sustain people economically in every other way. So you want to try and get a bit of a balance point between the two. But as I say, I think that comes back to doing a lot more work when you're building plans than hoping that you can fall back on the consent process to.
Do you think that the draft has found a balance point?
It's not obvious to me that it's done that, no. But then I think partly that's because they're proposing such a new system, and there's so much that is not there in sufficient detail. It really would be premature to try and say at this point in time that this is, is environmentally focused or is eventful.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.